Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today it's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Okay, so we're going to get right to that big question everybody's asking is, what is going on with the hummingbirds? A lot of people are telling you they're just not seeing them.
Yeah, it seems to be a legitimate thing. I mean, typically I'll get these questions either here at work, you know, oh, where are the birds in my neighborhood? And usually it's some local thing. But this seems to be more widespread. I mean, I'm getting reports from, you know, Falmouth to Truro, people like, I'm not seeing my hummingbirds. And even in my own yard. And I guess that's what gets me that's what gets me to accept that it's a real thing. Hey, my hummingbirds
aren't
there.
By golly, they're not here. Yeah.
This must be a real thing. Something must be done. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, typically I have a female who nests somewhere in the neighborhood, and I watch her collecting nesting material earlier in the spring, and then she comes to the feeders and comes to some of the plants I have around the yard. But she's been really scarce. Mm-hmm. But she'll turn up now and again. But she disappeared again recently after making another appearance. And I've been seeing a male. Typically, I don't see males very much,
right.
But I've been seeing one just about every day. But now the one that's coming around seems to be a a recently fledged bird, because it's, you know, they fly slower and they're less sure of themselves. And so I don't know what happened.
Like an awkward teenager in a way, huh?
Awkward teenager, exactly.
So when the hummingbirds, when they are sitting on the nest, you're not up to see them, right? Don't they kind of just hang there for a bit? Or do they still fly about even when
they're on the nest?
Yeah, when they're on the nest.
Well,
I think I read somewhere somebody said, well, they're on the nest right now.
Huh? Yeah, I think that's what I was saying last time. The females do all the work. They do all the incubating. They build the nest. They do all the incubating and all the rearing of the chicks. And so, she's busy.
You'd think we'd see the males, right?
But it's like that every year, and typically I see her more. So I'm not clear what's been going on, if things were in flower at different times where they didn't need to come to the feeders. And
right. I have to notice, every year I do notice in the late afternoon, a hummingbird or two will come through the garden and I notice them. But I haven't really been paying that much attention. I'll have to take a closer look at like 5 in the afternoon and see if I see anybody visiting my garden.
Yeah, I wish I knew what was going on. I mean, I have this vine. It's a honeysuckle vine. And wanted to buy the native one. This was an accidental purchase a few years ago. I approved it over the phone, buying of this vine, thinking it was the native one. It turned out to be a hybrid, with the native and one of the Asian ones. But it's turned out fine. It's really attractive to both hummingbirds and bees. The native one only attracts hummingbirds. The native honeysuckle vine has those long tubular red flowers. And it's 100% hummingbird pollinated. Not a lot of bees can get in those flowers. But this one, you know, it's got the typical honeysuckle flower. And the hummingbirds love it. I mean, they're on it all the time. And they do come to it, but just not as – I've been really surprised.
Not, yeah. All right, well, Christine from Kituit sent us a note. She says, FYI, hummingbirds seen in my garden and on feeders, but only females. And she's in Kituit, so – that's where they are. They're at Christine's house.
Oh, good. At least they're somewhere. It's pretty typical to only see females or mostly see females.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Love to hear your hummingbird report, if you will, or any bird questions, comments, or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I should say, we'll hear more than bird stories. We like any kind of wildlife stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Or whales or anything, right? We want to know what's going on.
Mammals, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So piping plover nesting season is over.
Just to be clear, I do know that whales are mammals.
Okay.
Don't send any emails.
Yeah. But the chicks are still, those little cute chicks are still on the beaches.
They are. Yeah, so this is it's an interesting time of the year. You know, for a lot of people, this is the beginning of their summer vacation. But it's also a time when some stuff is already over. Like a lot of nesting is over for a lot of our local birds, and they've fledged their chicks. With piping plovers, at this point in the summer, there won't be any more eggs. They're done laying nests. And so you're left with, by around the 1st of July, you're pretty much left with the nests that you have already and whatever chicks are out there that haven't fledged yet. And so, you know, they hatch and they instantly are running around, these little fuzzballs, cotton balls on toothpicks, as they say. They're adorable. Just running around.
They really
feed
are,
themselves
yeah.
from day one. They're fairly independent, but they do need to be brooded, sort of incubated, I guess, by the adults. It's called brooding, when they sit on them to keep them warm. So they have to do that, especially when we have cool, wet weather. But they're really running around on their own. But they're not considered fledged for 25 days, according to the state. But typically, it takes them longer than that to actually biologically fledge, meaning they can fly.
Right.
So until then, they're running around. They're at the mercy of crows and domestic dogs and foxes and things like that. And their numbers tend to go down over the weeks. You start with four chicks, and then by the end, sometimes you just have one. But sometimes they fledge all four. But there are a lot of chicks out there on the beaches right now. We haven't had a great year. The beaches I oversee, we've lost a lot of nests and then lost a lot of chicks, entire broods of chicks disappearing overnight. And so it's tough out there. It's tough to be a plover. They have a lot of things that they're facing. And but we do have some chicks out there that we're hoping to fledge
soon. Tomato, via, plover. Is it the same? Are they both correct? Plover versus plover?
They are both correct,
okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to check.
I've always been a plover guy, but I see the arguments for plover. It's sort of easier to say. There's a lot of other words that are spelled like that you pronounce that way. Mm-hmm. You
can say it either way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like lover. You don't say he was a great lover.
All right. Let's see. Mickey is calling from Mashpee. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. So I have been having, earlier in the season, I had several males and females coming to my hummingbird feeders. Now I have an occasional male and two regular females. And outside my kitchen window, I have a hummingbird nest.
Wow.
Really?
So I'm having so much fun.
Oh, I love
that's
it. Did
very
you have
cool.
a nest? That's very
what,
cool.
What is it in? What kind of a tree or whatever?
I'm not sure of the tree, but it's just, I have to use binoculars to see it, but it's only about five, 6 feet from my window.
Oh, that's very cool. Is it on a branch that sort of hangs down, that sort of like slopes downwards?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it has a canopy of leaves over it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all decorated with lichen. It just looks like a kind of bump on the branch, and it's all lichen-y.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so great. They're
The only reason I ever even saw it was I saw the hummingbird. I just happened to be looking out the window, and I saw the hummingbird land on it.
Yeah.
She still had eggs in there.
Oh, you'd never notice otherwise. Yeah, unless you really were looking. They're little works of art, you know, the lichens kind of stitched together with spider webs. They're beautiful.
Lucky you. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, and I've got two babies, and one of them was hanging on the edge of the nest the other day, flapping its wings like crazy, but it didn't go anywhere.
Well, if it's there next year, I would do a webcam. You'll be very popular.
Well, I'll try.
Oh, yeah. Sell ads. Yeah. No, really.
Do they typically come back to the same spot?
Probably not. They don't reuse nests like most birds. They don't reuse their nests. I mean, big birds like ospreys and eagles do, but songbirds and things don't reuse the same nests. But
they might come back to the same tree.
It's worth looking.
Yeah, I'll keep my eyes open.
All right. Thanks for sharing your story. Good to know we have somebody who's enjoying their hummingbirds.
Yes.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Nancy is calling from Mattapoisett. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there. So I have a question about my Oreo feeder. The Oreos have really been enjoying the grape jelly, but I notice another brown bird shows up to partake as well. I was wondering if you would know what type of bird that was.
A brown bird? That's not allowed at jelly feeders. It's just for the Orioles. No, I don't, actually. I mean, catbirds are gray, and catbirds are the second most common. Sometimes the most common bird you'll see at a jelly feeder is a catbird, certainly at my house. They love it. Yeah, cowbirds are brown. What's the shape? What does the bill look like? Is it definitely brown and not gray?
Yes, and I was wondering if it was a female purple finch. But
not likely.
Not likely. Okay.
They're not very common. House finches are common, and that's a possibility. If it has a thick finch-like bill and a sort of streaky bird, mousy, gray-brown, that would be a female house finch, and they're pretty common around houses, oddly enough. But does it have a thick finchy-type bill?
I think it does, yes. I think it does, but it looks too large to be a house finch.
Well, you know, if you can grab a picture next time it comes, we can probably have a better identification for you if you can get a picture of that brown bird.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the call. You bet. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Nikki was talking about how she wouldn't have seen that little hummingbird nest if she hadn't sort of watched the hummingbird with the, you know, fly over there. And I have discovered something interesting since, you know, I don't have my feeders up anymore because of the rats. Mm. So it forces you to really look around your backyard in a different way, where they were all coming to the feeders and you're not really noticing the other behavior. I'm now noticing other things they're doing. And that, I think, is how we found the catbird nest. I never in a million years would have looked inside that big hydrangea bush mm-hmm. if I didn't see them coming and going with the little twigs and things, you know? So, and we had the eggs and the little birds and they're gone. And so, you know, looked up to see how many, well, they have another nest. And sure enough, I think, I don't know if it's the same pair, but I've been watching in the last few days, a pair going to just across the fence in the neighbor's yard in a bush over there. And I'm thinking they must be doing another nest there.
They could.
It's not too late, right? I mean, don't they do like three or four sometimes?
Not three or four, no, but they could do two.
Two?
Yeah. And catbirds are great because they'll nest outside your front door. Mm-hmm. They love the kind of landscaping shrubs that people put up, foundation shrubs and things that dense, you know, arborvitae type stuff. And they'll put a nest in there, rhododendrons. And so they're a fun one that you can watch with kids and kind of keep track of it. They have beautiful eggs. They have these really
blue.
Yeah, they like robin's egg blue, but even
maybe
bluer.
Maybe a little more turquoisey or something.
Sure. They're gorgeous eggs, and they're just charming birds. Their song is great, and they're just. We're lucky to have a lot of them. In some places, they're considered a declining shrubland bird, but wouldn't know. I mean, they certainly like suburban Cape Cod and all the fruiting shrubs that we have here, the kind of wild, thickety wetlands that we mm-hmm. have that are full of fruiting shrubs later in the summer. Mm-hmm. They really like that. So they do very well here on the Cape. And so we've got them in our yards. They're fun to watch.
And sometimes they'll talk back to you. My daughter would imitate them and they would talk back
to her. What does it say, Mindy?
I don't know. What is it saying? Hello, what
how
a beautiful
often,
day.
How
you know?
Often is the bird talking to you?
Not to be. So I have another question about this nesting. I have lots of blue jays in my yard. What do they nest in? I'm always trying to figure out where are they going and is there a nest in there? Where do they normally nest?
Blue jays, they nest in trees, but they go a little bit quiet. They don't want you to know where their nest is, but they want to know where all the other birds' nests are because they're nest robbers, as mm-hmm. they say. They're well known for they quietly, you know, you think of them as loud birds most of the year. Rah, rah, they're just mm-hmm. obnoxiously loud bird. But this time of year, they go stealth and they're looking for other birds' nests, among other. They eat everything. But they will take eggs and nestlings from other birds' nests, so they're a little quieter. Mm. They sort of creep around. And they make a stick nest that's like it's sort of like a miniature crow nest. And you see them now and again, but it's funny. As common as they are, I'm not exactly tripping over blue jay nests, and I can't even think of one that I've found and been able to monitor, you know.
Right.
I see nests and I'm like, I think that was a blue jay nest, but they're surprisingly inconspicuous.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, just kind of watching them, you know, the bird behavior in the backyard. And as you know, my grandson's favorite bird is the robin, still continues to be.
It's his best bird.
It's his best bird. And his favorite color is blue. But when we talk about the blue jay, he says they're bullies. They're bullies. He's right.
That's funny. He is right. Yeah, they're definitely bullies. I mean, they come storming into the feeder area. They're imitating they're pretending to be hawks. They're not even honest. Just dishonest, nest-robbing birds. I like blue jays.
I do, too. I think they're beautiful birds.
Yeah. No, they're great.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Our number for your comments, questions, or stories this morning, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Arctic shorebird migration about to begin.
It has begun.
It has begun. All right.
It's so that's another reason it's kind of a funny time of year. You know, if you're an Arctic nesting shorebird or even some of our local birds, that summer's over. You know, you're done breeding. And
stop saying summer's over.
Summer's over. Is it Labor Day yet?
No.
But yeah, I mean, they nest during the month of June in kind of high Arctic tundra in some cases, some a little further south. They're done. And probably the first ones we're seeing, which have already started arriving, are ones that didn't have a successful nest, and so maybe they left a little earlier. An Arctic fox got their nest, or, you know. Just interesting side note, a lot of the nesting success of Arctic nesting shorebirds depends on lemming populations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they affect more than just how many snowy owls we might see the following winter. If there are lots of lemmings, then the predators are sated by all those lemmings and don't necessarily go after the shorebird nests, and so they'll have higher success. And this has been demonstrated with studies. It's pretty logical when you think about it. So anyway, it remains to be seen what kind of nesting success they had. We can kind of get a sense of that by the numbers we see during peak shorebird migration, which is pretty soon for some species. I mean, really, late July, we'll be seeing peak numbers of certain things, and it continues into September and even into October a little bit. But really, very soon, we'll be seeing numbers of things like short-billed dowitchers, semi-palmated plovers. I saw my first semi-palmated plover yesterday in Brewster. Saw a killdeer on a beach, which was kind of strange. So that's another local nesting bird that's already wandering. I mean, some of our piping plovers have already been seen south.
Wow.
Like, they've already migrated, and a lot of them stage in places like Georgia and the Carolinas and then go somewhere else for the winter, probably the Bahamas. But they've already flown south to their staging grounds. I mean,
wow.
They're done, and often the females leave earlier. So not just Arctic nesting shorebirds, even our own, are already migrating now.
Yeah. So what are some of the best spots if you wanted to check this out? To look, I mean, is any beach or
it could be any beach, particularly if it's it really needs to be a beach with some marsh, like a barrier beach, not necessarily not a lot of people, but like a marsh, mm-hmm. you know, the outlet of a creek, a typical barrier beach where you have a marsh system and a creek outlet, and then that sandy peninsula of a beach that protects that back marsh, especially if there's nice flat intertidal flats on low tide. Certainly, Chatham is full of good places, but they're harder and harder to get mm-hmm. to every year. I mean, South Beach was Mecca for shorebird seekers for mm-hmm. many years, and it's breaking apart. And for one thing, but it's also just very difficult to get out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was at Crosby Beach in Brewster because I monitor the piping plovers and lease terns that are nesting there. But that's where I saw mine. But just about anywhere. Chapin Beach in Dennis, you know, just a beach with some nice flats and some marsh, you have a good chance of seeing shorebirds.
At least terns, they're very protective of their nests. If you get a little cold, they'll dive bomb you and peck you on the head.
They won't peck you on the head. No. The bigger terns, the common terns will do that.
Oh, but the least terns don't?
The least terns they'll poop on you.
On purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll bombardier you. And
oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Get away.
The Coastal Waterbird research assistants are always walking around with these whitewashed hats if they're in charge of a least tern colony. Yeah. So, yeah, they have
The bigger ones, they will dive bomb you, right? I mean, the big ones, bigger terns, you said they will?
Yeah, the common terns. Yeah. If you were to go into the common tern colony in Monomoy where there's 25,000 common terns, there's laughing gulls. But the common terns, if you walk into the colony, they'll viciously attack your head. They'll draw blood. I've certainly seen that. They'll peck your ears. And so when you go into that colony, you have to wear a hard hat.
Be ready, yeah.
But the least terns, they don't like you being nearby, but they'll sort of swoop down, and they have this little machine gun call they give, and then they'll poop on you.
Yeah, it's like, I'm warning you.
Yeah.
Get out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the laughing gulls. I love the laughing gulls. I think that's my favorite gull.
How can you not? They're so mirthful. What are
they
laughing at?
But they're beautiful, too.
No, they're good-looking gulls. Yeah,
yeah.
That crisp black
head. Because gulls are usually
not
good-looking.
Gull? Jeez, that's a little judgy.
I know it is judgy, isn't it?
I don't know about that.
The laughing gulls.
I think gulls in their breeding plumage are generally, I think they're kind of universally good looking when they're in that crisp white-headed breeding plumage with the bill with the red spot at the gonadal angle down there, and you know, the gonadal angle. That was a little obscure term I dropped in there.
If you've seen those Finding Nemo movies with the gulls, mine.
I know. See, that's not very flattering. No, now there's a generation of children who think gulls are idiots.
Mine.
I know. People don't like gulls. I know.
Let's talk to Bob, who's calling from Eastham. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Morning. I'm going to kind of shift gears on you a little bit.
Sure.
When our family has vacationed here in Cape Cod occasionally, now the kids are a little bit older, we've enjoyed going on whale watches, and there's clearly some different birds that are out there. And I was wondering, what kind of birds are you likely to see on a whale watch?
Mm.
And I know that sometimes they've had to go quite a ways out to be able to see some whales.
Right.
And I'm wondering if what you see as far as birds depends on how far out you are.
Pelagic birds.
The pelagic. What a fine question, Bob from Eastham. What a learned individual you are. A gentleman and a scholar, Bob from Eastham. Well, thanks for that question. It's something I've been thinking about, too. And I haven't been out on a whale watch yet this season. And I'm kind of curious where they've been having to go to see the whales. And I don't know if John or maybe even Dennis will call in. But I do know that they've been seeing some interesting birds out there on Stellwagen Bank, which is the underwater feature that is protected by the Stellwagen Bank Marine Sanctuary. And it's a typical place for the whale watch boats to go in many years. But just recently, a boat was out there doing a survey on behalf of the sanctuary, and they saw a puffin.
Oh, really?
I was blown away by this. It's a very rare summer record for down here. I mean,
kind
they would
south,
normally,
yeah,
like Maine, kind of further up in Maine is down East Maine would be the first place you'd start picking up breeding puffins. And they had a common murre, which is very unusual. Also, would be much further north breeding right now. But they did have big numbers of what you would typically, the typical tourist going on a whale watch would see some things that you can't see from land very easily, namely the shearwaters. And they had large numbers of sooty shearwaters, great shearwaters, manx, I think, and then just a couple of corys. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. The corys don't seem to quite be in yet. They like the water a little bit warmer. But there are four species of shearwaters. It's really impressive when you start looking into their life history and the different corners of the globe that they come to us from. These are really interesting ocean ranging seabirds with they're called tube noses. They have this interesting structure on their bill that helps them detect very subtle smells on the surface of the ocean and helps them find food. Unlike most birds, they have a sense of smell. And so there are, you know, people are focused on the whales, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's what they're paying the money for. They're not, the average person's not going out there to see shearwaters or petrels. but if you are interested in them, let them know. Let the naturalists know. I think it's good for them to know that people are interested in birds as well.
Mm-hmm.
It probably won't change much. You're still going to be chasing the whales. But it's good. I like for them to know that there are people who are wanting to see the birds as well.
Yeah.
And Wilson Storm Petrel is another one. That's a fun bird that nests in huge numbers in the southern hemisphere, like the southern Atlantic Ocean, most of the way down to Antarctica. And then they come up here for their winter, our summer.
Would you see Jaegers now, too?
Possibly. The chances go up with every day. And then by the end of the summer, when the terns are staging, the Jaegers are in numbers, parasitic mm-hmm. Jaeger especially. And it's really fun to watch those guys chasing the terns.
They're quite the flyers.
Absolutely. They're incredibly athletic flyers.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, keep an eye out for Jaegers. And, no, you can see roseate terns out there. You can hear them. If you listen for their little chivik, chivik, they have a different call. And that's a federally endangered bird.
Mm.
And they're often out there when you're on a whale watch. They're kind of around.
So bring your binoculars.
Yeah,
for sure.
So there's a lot of interesting birds out there.
Yeah.
So.
Bob, good luck. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a good point. Maureen is calling from Aquinnah. Hi, Maureen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last night I was walking at dusk at the beach at Dogfish Bar up here in Aquinnah. And that's a commonplace for young ospreys to go fishing in the evening. And this one osprey was really giving it its best shot and finally came up with a fish. And as soon as it shook itself dry, a black-back seagull swooped in on it, crashed into the osprey. The osprey dropped the fish. Nobody got the fish, and they both parted ways. Mm. Just thought it was a real lose-lose situation.
At any point, did the gull go, mine, mine?
I didn't hear that. It was a little bit far away, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Boy.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, that was the first for me to see that. Well, the gull doesn't even have claws for grabbing the fish, does it? It would have to use its beak?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of behavior that is why gulls need a publicist. They're just not very popular. And blackback gulls especially, I mean, they're such brutes. I mean, they swallow other seabirds whole.
Oh, my goodness.
Just
goodness.
Bludgeon other smaller gulls to death. I've seen that
and
happen.
And you wonder why they have a bad reputation.
I know. It's deserved.
And they really are big. I mean,
oh, it's a
know.
Huge bird.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Blackback gull at a distance is often hard to tell from an osprey. It's kind of the, because ospreys have that sort of gull wing look to them, and they're not that different in size. I mean, it's a big bird.
Yeah.
I never did realize that until I took a picture of it last night and thought, my gosh, they're almost equal contenders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my
call. Maureen, thanks for sharing that. We love those stories. Yeah. Thanks.
All right.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, I'm going to bring up something else about the gulls again. Don't feed them.
Right.
Because if you start feeding them, you know, they'll come down. They can snatch a little kid's hand and really do some damage. You know, they see, you know, a kid's got a cookie
Has
or
that
a french
happened?
Fry. I see them snatching stuff off the beach all the time.
What kid? Has a kid really been hurt by a gull? I suppose they could be.
They could be.
Swans,
that's the point. They could be.
Butte swans is what I worry about. they could break someone's arm.
Yeah, they're big.
They break an adult's arm with those wings. They're aggressive. There was one that killed a dog. I think it was in England.
Oh, my.
I was making the rounds in the news. It was a couple of wing beats, and it just bludgeoned someone's dog that was kind of bothering
goodness.
Them. They had chicks and killed the dog. So, yeah, don't mess with a mute swan. The gulls are... I don't know. I'm not that worried about them.
Don't
feed them. There's a restaurant owner I won't name who feeds gulls somewhere up up in Provincetown. And I don't think that the Park Service has been after him. It's not the best thing to do.
No, because they're not afraid of you. You know the.
Yeah.
And they see your lunch, they're going to help themselves.
There's different reasons to be against feeding gulls. And the gull populations are actually declining. It used to be that, the gull populations are they're too high because of landfills and, you know, commercial fishing and things like that. So the populations are unnaturally high, but they seem to be coming back down to earth because of the decline of commercial fishing and because all the landfills have been capped. And so these sort of artificial food sources aren't there for them anymore. And so they're having to behave more normally. And so we're starting to see, you know, what gull populations probably should be. And the other thing is the place where most of them nest around here is North Monomoy off Chatham. And that's been eroding away with the shifting barrier beach system there and the shifting sands of Monomoy.
It's going to get worse.
North Monomoy has really been eroding away, and they need those uplands for nesting. And so I don't think many of the herring and great blackback gulls are able to nest there anymore.
And we've had gulls nesting on the Cape Cod Mall. I don't know if they still do.
Yeah, rooftop nesting is a fun subject. And I think they're in downtown Hyannis, too. I think there are a lot of seabirds that will nest on rooftops. Even federally endangered roseate terns will nest on rooftops.
Is that right?
I think in the Keys, least terns have colonies on rooftops. It's a big thing, especially down south, but really the entire Atlantic seaboard. American oyster catchers will nest on rooftops.
That's another cool bird.
Oh, they're very cool. And so this has come up on a listserv that I'm on about oyster catchers. You know, what do we do? This oyster catcher pair nesting on a rooftop, like well away from the water. And so those chicks who can't fly, you know, for like a month, you know, have to make it down to the ground and sometimes cross streets when they do this rooftop nesting. But yeah, it's an increasing thing. And certainly there's no ground predators up there. You don't have to worry about foxes and coyotes. Maybe crows, you know, maybe gulls, but predation is certainly low. And some of these rooftops still have that kind of gravelly surface, and they haven't switched to the black rubber, mm-hmm. which is increasingly how they roof commercial properties, like big flat right. roof properties. But the ones that still have the kind of gravelly, you know, it seems like a gravelly beach yeah. if you're a killdeer or least tern or whatever. Yeah. And so sometimes it can be a successful place for them to nest.
As long as they don't
but
fall
yeah, the,
off.
Yeah, the yeah. gulls are yeah the gulls are nesting on the rooftop. I don't know if anybody's surveying that, counting
know.
Them up there.
I don't know.
If anyone
it's
from the state
question.
Is getting up there and really assessing how many gulls are nesting on rooftops.
Yeah, be good to know. And then the other one, turkeys. We're seeing a lot more turkeys. That's another one you don't want to feed in your yard because then they're going to hang around. And they're pretty birds, but they can be aggressive too. The toms,
yeah,
chasing. They don't like mailmen, letter carriers. They don't like them. They I don't know, something about the uniform. It doesn't always seem like they're running after like a mail truck or somebody delivering the mail.
I don't know. People don't like federal employees. I don't know what it is. Turkey. No. There's those stories of mailmen getting chased by turkeys and then getting laughed at when they go back to the office by the other mailmen. But that's a big intimidating bird. And I know if you feed birds. And the
so here
seed
we have,
on
feed
the ground.
The songbirds, but they're telling you not to feed the big ones.
I know, but the turkeys will come by. I mean, we have them at the sanctuary, and they're just kind of always there. They become semi-domesticated. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, the kids like to look out the window and see the big turkey. It's a bird they can see really easily and fun. But, yeah, I'm sort of over them and thinking of ways to, like, keep them away from where the other ground birds are trying to feed. But there are people who feed them specifically, like right. I'm feeding my turkeys, and they buy cracked corn or whatever,
right?
And that's not really necessary, right. But you know, people are going to do what
they're going to do. Yep. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Verity, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Leach storm petrels. Think maybe breeding on monomoys?
Well, who knows? there was an intriguing report, and this is an obscure species to be sure. If you go out on whale watches, like I was talking about, or sometimes from land, you can see Wilson storm petrels, very abundant at times. Small seabird, they're great. They're like sea swallows. You know, you kind of at a distance, you're like, is that a swallow? They're bigger, but they sort of bound along just over the surface of the water, and they walk on the water. They put down their little webbed feet and sort of bounce on the water a little bit, patter their feet. So they're really distinctive, and they're eating, plankton, like zooplankton and nekton, small floaty creatures. But there's this other storm petrel, and like I said, the Wilsons are a southern hemisphere breeder. They're up here, you know, for their winter. But there's a Leach's storm petrel, and this is the northern hemisphere storm petrel around here, and they breed, mostly further north and kind of northern Europe, places like that. But they're a very mysterious bird in Massachusetts. They nest apparently, and I don't know if anybody's even keeping track anymore, but they nested on penniquise in, like an old building foundation and rock wall, these old kind of structures. They're crevice and burrow nesters. And they're nocturnal. So there's still a lot of mysteries about these birds because they are out at sea all day somewhere, sometimes very far from where their nest is, and then they come back to the nest at night, and they make these crazy kind of purring and chuckling sounds. And one of the crew down on Monomoy had worked up in Maine, had worked with Leach's storm petrels, and he heard this purring sound on Monomoy. And I'm not aware of nesting records for Monomoy. There might be, but I don't know if there's the right kind of habitat there for them to burrow. And you know, they seem to like structures. But it was very intriguing, especially because people have been seeing them east of Chatham, just like a couple. They're not a common bird. I mean, you'll see thousands of Wilson storm petrels for every Leach's storm petrel that you might see. Hmm. And they're a little bigger. They have longer wings. They fly more erratically. They fly kind of like a nighthawk, if you're familiar, if you know what a nighthawk looks like when it flies. But it's something to keep an eye out for. And it's not like you can go to Monomoy to follow up on this. It's very difficult to get out. This is somebody who lives out there in a tent.
It used to be easy to get out to Monomoy, not anymore.
Right. It's just really intriguing for a bird that is a mysterious state-endangered bird that you certainly never hear about. Mm-hmm. Even when I go to meetings of people who, you know, monitor the endangered seabirds and shorebirds in Massachusetts, you don't really hear much about them. They're just, I think they're still in Penikees, maybe. But if they're nesting somewhere else, that would be really cool.
It would be news.
A bird of mystery.
Yeah. All right, so Eleanor has sent us some photos. She says, hi, love the bird report. Here's a quick question. I think the male in these photos is a house finch, but it seems to be a bit too red. It's probably just a very red house finch. And she's right. It's a red house finch, right?
It's a house finch, yes. Yeah. Can everybody see that?
Yeah.
yeah, it's just people get confused about house finch versus purple finch. And for the most part, it's a non-issue because purple finches are not common. They do breed throughout Massachusetts very sparsely, and they do breed on the Cape, but not very many places.
So if you think it's a purple finch, we need a
photo.
A bird
of your feeder in the summer.
That's right.
The overwhelming likelihood is that it's a house finch. And it's a different kind of red, and that they're streaky all through where the red is on a male house finch. The females are easier to tell, actually. Mm-hmm. The female house finch is really plain, and the female purple finch has this bold, pale eye line. It's a big, wide, pale line above the eye, and sort of a masked look. Very, very different than the house finches. It can be a little more difficult to tell the males apart, but they have different shape and everything. But again, the thing people need to remember, it's mostly a non-issue. It's not very likely you have a purple finch. In migration, it's a little more likely, like in the fall, if they're moving, there's a period where you could easily get a purple finch turning up at your feeders, but for the most part, not so much.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what's happening out at Race Point? We talk a lot of times about, see a lot of cool birds and stuff out there. Anything happening out there? I imagine it's still a good spot to check out.
It's been productive. People have been seeing like royal terns. I don't know about this week who's been getting out there, but it's good year round. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always something to see out there. Even whales. I mean, not just birds. People have been seeing roseate terns and numbers of common terns and even royal terns, which is a rare southern tern. They've been seeing them there two at a time. I don't know if it's the same individuals. They've been seeing them other places too. And now is the time when you should be able to start seeing these shearwaters. You can do the Landlubbers Whale Watch special. You get seasick, you just go to Race Point.
Go to Race Point, yeah.
Get a scope. A scope is helpful, but not always. If you can get yourself all the way out to the race, you have to walk a couple of miles in soft sand, potentially,
it's a nice walk,
or take
though.
The Hatches Harbor Dyke Road. It's worth getting out there. That's where the deeper water comes closer to shore, and so you're more likely to get some of the more ocean-going stuff.
It's just like you are on a boat.
It's exactly like you're on a boat, but much more stable, less vomiting.
Herring Cove, the new parking lot, is opened up there now. So, they did that big renovation. I've only seen pictures. I haven't actually seen it in person yet.
Yeah, I haven't been up
there
either.
I love going over there. Even like, on a day where it's maybe not too, a little bit chilly out, not this time of year, but, you can just pull up there in the parking lot, take your binoculars in your car and...
Got to get up there. It feels very far away this time of year.
Well, this time of year,
once you get this side of July 4th, it's like your world contracts. It's like
September, it's even better.
Gee, Provincetown's awful far away. Traffic. You have a smaller and smaller home range.
Yeah, it's true. Susan's giving us a call from Chilmark. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good
morning.
Good. I have two questions. One is about a bird that I'm hearing at night. And I believe it's an owl, but it doesn't have the traditional sort of hoo sound. Mm-hmm. It's more of a roo, like that.
Like a horse whinny?
Yeah, sort of. That
didn't sound like a horse whinny. I'm going to need you to do that again and repeatedly.
It's sort of like a Latina sound, like I don't know, but yeah,
it's like a Latina owl
or something. But I'm hearing it at night, and my kids are curious about it, so I just wanted to find out if you knew what that was.
Do the sound again?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
It goes rrr, rrr, like that.
Oh. So it goes down.
It's like in pitch. That sort of vibrational, but it sounds like a hoo sound. So that's what's happening every night.
Yeah, I mean, Mindy's right. The most likely is screech owl, and it does sound like a, as I say, the ghost of a tiny horse. It's like...
Okay. Yes, that's it.
Okay, yeah. It's a screech owl. And then this time of year, there are young ones about, and they make some kind of, you know, in that same arena, but different sounds that aren't quite the classic whinny. And then they do the... all on one pitch tremolo.
We actually have a screech owl sound. Dan, are you bringing that
Who
up?
Who needs
screech,
it? What, you don't like my imitation?
Screech dash zero.
Killing myself dash over
zero.
Here.
Bird dash zero. Bird dash zero, yeah. I think, yeah. We'll take a listen. We'll see if that's what you're hearing.
I think I was doing a fine job.
Oh, no. That was actually perfect. Much better than I was doing, for sure. The second question I have is about a bird that I see during the day and in the cliffs. Down along the beach, the cliffs are mostly clay, and there are holes that are made by the birds, and they nest inside of the cliff, and they're black. And right at about this point that we're finding, you know, the baby birds that are trying to fly, but they've, you know, they're falling sort of towards the bottom of the cliff.
I wonder if the erosion is... you know, exposing the nests, and then they fall out. If they don't, these are bank swallows. Maybe northern rough wing swallows. They both nest in burrows in banks, but typically it's bank swallows. And if you look at them closely, they're dark on top and white underneath, and they have like a neck band underneath. And then the rough wing swallow just is kind of like a brown wash on the throat and upper breast, but is brown above. And they both nest in these banks. Rough-winged swallows will nest in crazy places as well, like the tailpipe of a steamroller, where I found a nest once. But anyway, it's interesting to hear that you're finding babies just at the base of the cliff?
Yeah, so the erosion is a problem there on the cliff at Lucy Vincent Beach in Chilmark. And so every day during the winter, especially, the scene changes because of the waves coming in and changing the way the cliffs look. But particularly now, yesterday or the day before, there were two baby birds that had fallen or tried to fly, and they were at the bottom of the nest. And you're not allowed to go onto the cliff because of erosion.
You couldn't really get it back in the nest.
What would you do? In that sense, like, would you do with these baby birds, you know?
It's never come up. That's an interesting question, and I don't know. I'd be curious to hear from the bird rehab community if they've had any luck with baby swallows. I mean, they're insectivores. I guess you could feed them like any other baby bird, but then, you know, flying is super important to swallows. It's their whole life. They fly more than they land over the course of their life. I don't have any personal experience with what it's like to try to raise orphaned or displaced baby swallows. It's a good question. And like you're saying, you can't, you know, with songbirds, try to put it back in the nest if you see the nest. But you can't really
you can't
do that in this
back,
situation.
Yeah.
The nest might not even be there anymore if it eroded away. In my I monitor a property in an island in Chatham that has multiple colonies, and I haven't seen this. I mean, I think their substrate's a little more stable. They try to find a, not necessarily clay, but not pure sand where it's just going to erode away, like a little more stable substrate to put their burrow in so it doesn't disappear. But it sounds like the erosion is so bad there that they're just...
Susan, some investigating obviously needs to be done here. We'll have to check into this and see what we can find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for answering the question.
Sure.
Have a great day.
Thanks for posing it.
Okay.
We have an email from EG. It says, I'm in Dennisport for the summer, usually in Brewster, and try to feed the hummingbirds. This is the third year when there are fewer, gradually diminishing. I used to sit on my porch early in the morning and at dusk till one came to the feeder. I've only seen two in a month, and I changed the syrup regularly. So just so you know.
What were these again? This is hummingbirds?
Hummingbirds, yep. This is back to hummingbirds. Right. Yeah, so another one who's noticing less and less hummingbirds. So,
yeah, something's going on.
So tell us some of the things. We have still a few minutes left. What's going on over at the sanctuary? I know you've got lots of different programs. You know, a lot of times, you know, we have these. We like to get the kids interested, right? So what's going on? You do the bird banding sometimes. This time of year, do you have any bird banding going on?
No.
No.
Well, that's not true. So... I mean, certainly day camp is in full swing now, and there's just kids everywhere learning about nature. It's great. And the bird banding that we do, the kind of migration monitoring bird banding, ends the end of May. So then during the day camp, during the summer, what I do is I band the nestlings in our purple martin gourds. And so it's exciting because this year we have way more nests. Hmm. And so thanks to the Birdwatchers General Store, we have this gourd complex with nesting purple martins. And they're the only ones, out beyond Harwich, really.
So if you really want to see one.
This year they might be the only ones that side of Barnstable. So the only ones on the Outer Cape. And we have... I think seven nests. Last year we had three. The year before we had one. And so it's really been skyrocketing. And so I've got color bands. I'm, you know, interested to see if our chicks come back or if they turn up at someone else's colony. And so we have these color bands with a field-readable string of characters on it. And so you can identify an individual and figure out where it came from. And so often I'll see a bird with a red band that came from Mary Kelleher's colonies in Mashpee, which are at some golf courses. And there's hundreds of them there. I mean, that's the source of, it's like the source of all purple martins in the rest of the region are these colonies in Mashpee. But I've had birds from Connecticut, so it's fun to put these field-readable color bands on these birds because you can see where they're coming from. And so I'll do that with some of the day camp groups where I'll band the nestlings and kind of demonstrate, you know, how that's done and why we do it.
Even a fun day just to kind of take the kids and come on out to the sanctuary and
oh, we have
look.
All, there's all yeah, kinds of tidal flats programs.
Yeah, and then
all
there's also, you can see, you know, from inside, you can look at the bird feeders and see all the different birds.
We have our exhibit area has been revamped over the last year or more. And so we've got some new feeders there. We have a feeder area that is going to be, you know, more for kids that we're still kind of working on stuff there. But we do new interpretive exhibits and things. And so definitely worth coming by and take a hike and check out the exhibits. Sign your kid up for day camp.
That. In the last 30 seconds or so that we have we heard anything about Felix, the snowy owl that was here for a while and then took off? Do we know any reports? Anybody seen him anywhere? Do we know?
I've lost track of Felix. It's a good question. I probably should have checked on that. But, you know, there was a report at South Beach by the plover crew. They had an owl back in May, I want to say. Maybe early June. They got a picture of it, and someone also saw maybe the same bird at Duxbury Beach. I can't remember if it was before or after. And I was like scrutinizing these photos and looking at photos of Felix, and it seemed like it was probably the same bird, but it was hard to tell.
All right. Well, maybe we'll know next
time. Maybe next time we'll
figure it out. Mark's here the second Tuesday of the month. Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Thanks for being here.
See you next time.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.